Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
It's a little bit of a brisk day, isn't it, Josh?
It's a perfect day. Absolutely.
I wouldn't
perfect.
Say that.
Stop.
I would not say that.
Why?
Well, I got a hoodie and the sweatpants on. We were just talking about it. Like, I got to get up out on the golf course like a few more times here before the snow comes. But I'm sitting here in the outfit going like...
They make quarter zips for a reason, Zach.
No, I know. Look, I like my fall, colder, you know, golf ensemble.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
I also know where we live, and I'm like, I've got like 2 weeks of that before like all hell breaks loose.
No. We're good. We'll be fine. We'll be fine.
Not going out this weekend. Next weekend, Red River. I'm not doing anything. Although Sunday I could, because the Bills play on Monday night.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God. Another primetime game.
Another primetime game.
I just want 1 o'clock games back. I know we all wanted.
Nope, you're getting one.
I know we all wanted primetime for so many years, but.
You are getting one 1 o'clock game every month. That's it. Everything else can be primetime.
Does it really work out like that?
No.
Oh, I was gonna say, wow.
I think we're actually almost done with the primetime games.
Oh, okay.
Well, Zach, yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, the light is there. The light at the end of the tunnel is there. Kind of.
Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. I do want to start with the Bills today. Josh, me and you were talking about it in the break. So the Adams thing has legs. The Devontae Adams rumors have legs. A lot of reports, namely, I'm seeing Diana Rossini today talking about how teams like Buffalo and Kansas City are monitoring the situation. I think that is a key word there. They're not, you know, calling. They're monitoring. The more likely to get involved if the Raiders are willing to take some of the money, because this has kind of been the known thing for Adams. Like almost $1 million gets taken off each week this goes on until, you know, the trade deadline, where it's, I think, around $10 million, maybe a little bit more. It's just, I would be very surprised if the Bills actually got involved in this. I really, really would, I think.
I think I would too, just because of the fact of how much it's going to cost in terms of the Bills in particular are going to need the Raiders to retain some money and keep some money. Mm-hmm. And that's going to just drive the price of the trade up even more.
Yep.
So while I want the Bills to do this, and I think they should, and it sounds like they kind of are at least talking about it, I just don't know if it's actually feasible, especially because there's other teams that are probably more motivated and have more capital to actually give up.
The Jets.
I don't
actually competing with.
I don't want that, because then you just get the instant, oh, well, they're going to come back and win the division and they're going to go win the Super Bowl. And it's like, no, they're still going to be.
I don't know if you'll actually end up getting that.
I think you will.
I think the Jets have worn their welcome for a lot of national media.
Yeah, but they're still, like, even now, like, they're still talking about, every time you look at the TV, if you're watching ESPN, like, every other headline is, oh, well, if Adams goes to the Jets, are they going to be this favorite or that favorite? Or what does Rodgers feel? How does this, like,
it's, well, I mean, yeah, it's a talking point, but I think if, like,
well, I know it's a talking point, but it's still, like, everyone's on the side of, yes, it will drastically improve their season. And yeah, it'll improve their season for sure, but I don't think it'll improve to the point where they're going to win the division. I mean,
yeah, their coaching is still atrocious.
Right, and they still don't have, they still have that, whatever the heck is happening with with Aaron Rodgers and Robert Saleh. Whatever is going on there is still going to exist when Davante Adams gets there, if he
does.
Yeah,
it's not changing.
No, it's not going away. He's not changing that. But I look at this situation, and I think it'd be smart for the Bills to go here. But at the same time, this saga, if you want to call it that, because we've had a lot of wide receiver sagas over the last 6 months, mm-hmm. this next edition of that is just going to be a distraction factor, taking attention away from all the other wide receivers that are available. I mean, we were talking before the show of all the different guys that could still be available for the Bills. I mean, you have Amari Cooper, Deontay Johnson, potentially, if Carolina wants to get, you know, a little trade happy here now that things aren't going their way. Even DeAndre Hopkins. I'm not saying he's the perfect choice, but mm-hmm. There's still, you know, something there potentially. But I think that what's happening here, if it keeps going on long enough, which it will because of the fact, like you said, every week his money goes down. If it keeps going on long enough, you could see teams like the Bills or other teams just kind of like bow out and go for one of the cheaper options. And, yep. Well, I'm not saying that's the best thing to do, but if it gets to a point where it's a ridiculous trade offer, then you have to just bow out and go for a better option.
I also don't want to sit here and act like Adams is like a desperate need, that the Bills are hemorrhaging at wide receiver. We'll see about the availability of Khalil Shakir. He did not practice yesterday.
That, I think, has a lot of weight in this situation, too. If he is going to be out for a little bit,
Or is just flat out hampered by an ankle injury
right.
that kind of lasts for a few weeks.
Yeah, but the problem is like I said, this is probably going to happen the week of or the week before the deadline.
Yeah.
So that's, you're sitting there for 3-4 weeks.
A few weeks. When is actually the deadline?
It's sometime at the end of the month.
I know it got moved back. Although that's kind of fun that, like, we don't have to wait forever. This isn't like something that happens in the middle of November.
Oh, I know. Yeah. It is Tuesday, November 5th. It's election day. That's wild. 4 p.m. on election day is also the NFL trade deadline.
Oh,
how does that happen?
That day's going to suck. So we're a little bit over a month away. Today's October 3rd, November 5th. Got it.
Four or five weeks. Yeah, like that's a long time.
With all this being said, I like the Adams talk. I'm always for adding wide receivers. I think everyone kind of knows, if they've listened to me, I am somebody that wants the Bills to draft another receiver in the first three rounds. This upcoming year, I want them to keep doing that, because I think they did let the cupboards get empty. They let the cookie jar get empty, what have you. My only issue with adding a guy like Davante Adams, number one, if the asking price stays the same, a second round pick and maybe a little more, like a second and a fifth, what have you, you're not signing a 32-year-old to then a 2 or 3 year deal. You're trading all of that for 1 year.
Not even 1 year. Half a year.
Half a year. where does that work, make sense? If you're 7-1, 8-1, you know, what have you at that point, does really trading all of that for Adams make you a better Super Bowl contender than maybe you already were? Or let's say things go to hell and the Bills are like 3-4 and they've lost four straight and it's just not looking good.
Right. That's where you're more aggressive and
But then to the point you trade for Adams and you're getting rid of all of your young assets or a lot of your draft capital that you have, a lot of what you build up your team to salvage a single season, a season in which, let's be honest, if you're 3-4, a single wide receiver, 32 years old, no matter how good Devontae Adams is not going to change all that much. All your problems are still going to be there. I feel the same way about Kansas City. I actually don't think Adams changes all that much for the Chiefs. They're still way too dependent on one guy. They were with Rashee Rice. He was putting up some of the best stats of a wide receiver this season, and their offense still looked broken. So does Adams really change, you know, the trajectory for them? Not really. That's always been my thing with wide receivers.
Mm-hmm.
I love the position. It's my favorite one in the sport. It's a big reason why I've fallen in love with the sport. And ultimately, it doesn't change a ton. Coaching matters. Your quarterback matters. You know, the talk of scheming guys open. It's why I've loved the first 3 weeks with the Brady and Allen offense of using motion and scheming guys open, getting James Cook used, getting Keon Coleman, Shakir, everybody, really outside of Curtis Samuel, it felt like at times.
Mm-hmm.
Week 4 against Baltimore, a lot of that motion went away. A lot of what they were using that worked went away. And then the offensive line didn't play particularly well. The defense was a disaster, what have you. Really, that game was a complete just throw the tape in the fire and forget about it. It never happened. Erased from history. Use the whole Men in Black, you know, zoom, is it what, you know, whatever you call it. Use that. And that's my thing too. And this is always kind of the frustrating thing with NFL football, but really football in general. We have one game a week, and so a lot of us have been stewing on the Bills getting absolutely boat raced by Baltimore on primetime. At night, your offense looked anemic. Your defense looked dreadful. So I think there is going to be that feeling of got to make a big move now, where ultimately they could go into Houston, who we talked to John Harris yesterday. He mentioned a number of times that, like, if Houston plays like to the point where they have up to this season, that they could get blown out. And Houston is 3-1. But he was mentioning, like, if they go in with all the penalties that they're getting, their offensive line still looks like they are. The defense still looks like it has at times. They're going to get blown out. Trevor Lawrence is a big reason why Jacksonville didn't beat them by multiple scores. Couldn't hit wide open guys. I think, what did John say? They were yawning wide open. You know, so I guess it's a big thing for me, and why I'm glad the deadline is a few weeks away, and why, while, you know, this is going to be an interesting situation, I think it is key that Diana Rossini, when she's reporting, is saying monitoring. They're not necessarily calling. They're not necessarily even gauging the interest. They're just checking out what's going on.
Well, and that's something too. Like, Jeremy and Joe were talking about this in terms of what does monitoring mean, right? Does it mean you're actively talking with the Raiders? Does it mean you're actively talking with the agent? Because you technically can do that because he's requested a trade and the team's, well,
he hasn't requested a trade,
but the team has said, you know, hey, we're going to be trading you, like, clearly. So that is kind of a gray area right now in terms of what they're actually conversating about. But I want to go back to your point about, you know, if the Bills are 3-4 or if they're 7-1, how does this situation change? If they're 7-1, I think you still see them maybe potentially add a wide receiver, but just not one that's going to cost them a lot of the future. Maybe, like, again, like an Amari Cooper, or if Carolina's in the trade talks, Deontay Johnson, or even Adam Thielen. But I think that if they're that successful, depending on how they win the games, that's a key point. Also, if they're 3-4, 4-3 even, depending on how they lost those games, I think you can see them get way more aggressive for Devontae Adams, but I think it happens sooner than the trade deadline. I think it could be,
you know, looking at this too, we're zeroing in on wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Are we sure they don't try to add a pass rusher?
Right. With Von Miller now suspended.
Von Miller suspended, and up to this point, Miller's been their best pass rusher. Yeah. Rousseau had 3 sacks in game 1. He hasn't had a single one since. Right. I don't even think he's had a pressure at this point. He has very much disappeared. if we're being honest, of like Raiders players I'd rather trade for, which I don't think the Raiders are like blowing it all up, but if we're being honest, of a Raiders player I'd be willing to trade a second round pick for and go after, it's Max Crosby. But he's not available, I don't imagine.
No. You know who? I don't think he'd be available. Pending free agent next offseason, Khalil Mack.
Is he 35?
33, I think I saw yesterday.
I was gonna say,
33.
Is he?
Which is wild to me. Like, I did not think he was that
old.
Yeah, thank you. I didn't realize he was that old. But
quietly had like 16 sacks last year.
Hey.
I don't disagree. Like, you're right.
I mean, again, I don't think he'd be available, but at the same time,
actually,
he's a pending free agent. You never know. But I wonder, again, it depends on how these games are won and lost, right? I mean, it depends on what the team needs at the time. Again, if they're losing games, if, you know, you lose 2 out of the next 5,
because
that'll lead you up to trade deadline week, because the last game you play before the trade deadline is the Dolphins on November 11th or November 3rd, sorry.
Which you should blow them out. They look horrendous.
But in between now and then, you play the Texans, the Jets, the Titans, the Seahawks, and the Dolphins. So there's
I hate looking at that, because now I'm sitting here, even after, you know, the bad loss to Baltimore, I still think they're going to beat Houston. Mm-hmm. I have not liked how they looked. The Jets, I don't like how they look at all.
Right.
And yes, it's in New York, but
Doesn't do much for me.
No, I think a lot of it too, like the home field advantage, what have you, has kind of like died for me, just because I've watched now Buffalo lose in the playoffs at home,
mm-hmm.
and so like home field advantage, I'm like, no, if you have a great quarterback, if you have a good team, like you should be fine.
Yeah.
Tennessee, joke, they're not good. Seattle, I like a lot. That game could be tough.
Right. So let's say
Miami
in this five, you lose one and it's Seattle, right?
Yeah.
Let's just say it's that. So then you're sitting at 7-2
mm-hmm.
at the trade deadline.
That becomes, for me, like you're just making a move of like depth, maybe adding a linebacker, adding another edge rusher, what have you.
I don't think at that point, if you're that successful, that you really, not that you don't need to add him, but like you said, you don't want to hemorrhage the future if you're already successful. But at the same time, that's the like easier part of your schedule. After that, you have the Colts, the Colts are the Colts. But then you have the Chiefs, 49ers, the Rams, the Lions, and then you close out with the Patriots and the Jets
mm-hmm.
in the last three games. Two games against the Patriots there. So I don't know if we can really use this middle part of the schedule leading up to the trade deadline as a gauge for the rest of the season, because of the fact that that's a softer part of the schedule.
Yeah.
It's really everything after that that you would be gearing up for, because even if you go 4-1 in the next five games, it's still a question of, okay, yeah, but what about Kansas City? What about San Francisco? What about Detroit? What about Baltimore if there's potential meetup in the playoffs?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of factors that play into what happens after the next month of football. Because even if you win these next four games, like we've been saying, it still matters what you do after that. It doesn't matter what you win in October. It matters what you win in February. It matters what you win in January.
Well, yeah, and no one wants to be the best team in September, October.
Right.
No one really wants to be the Minnesota Vikings.
Exactly, yeah. So it comes down to, depending on how the prices get jacked up here, I think they kind of have to go for somebody just for some depth, just for some insurance, because we've already seen some holes in this everybody eats plan. The Ravens kind of exposed that on Sunday night.
Yeah, once Shakir had his ankle injury. He ultimately does have, I forgot about that this happened after the injury,
mm-hmm.
the broken play, he goes for 50 yards or what have you. They're really, this is my biggest problem. I mean, Kincaid's your first round pick that was, you know, treated as like a wide receiver in a tight end's body, what have you, the mismatch, all that. I've got to see more out of him. I think he's going to be kind of the guy that I do push for maybe them to add an Amari Cooper or Davante Adams if they're not getting first round quality out of him. He, I think, is going to be that guy that ultimately pushes me to the side of, like, no, go make a move. Because you're not getting what I think I was hoping for, I think a lot of us were hoping for, which is maybe that Sam Laporta jump. Where last year you saw the Lions, it was Amon-Ra St. Brown, their running game with Gibbs and Montgomery. But then it was Laporta. Laporta, you know, put up double-digit touchdowns, was great as a rookie tight end, immediately productive. A lot of that due to the fact that I think the Lions at one point literally didn't have another tight end on their roster, so he had to start. But now you're seeing, too, how good they've become with the emergence of Jameson Williams, who his career got off to a very slow start with suspensions and injuries and all that stuff. Now you're starting to see what that's become, where we've yet to see that emergence with Kincaid. I've had some people tweet at me, too. It's a lot of, you know, well, they haven't had to use him yet. Sure, but I've already seen Keon Coleman have two games where he's either first in receptions and yards or like second, and Shakir has been number one in EPA for most of the season as a wide receiver. Kincaid has been a non-factor completely. And that's with a tight end group in the NFL of guys that just aren't even playing. Either they're hurt, they're not being used at all, they're old, and he's like eighth or ninth or tenth in most categories. It's just, I need more out of him for me to not want to go down this trade route. I've already kind of mentioned it. I know Chris Trapasso mentioned it this morning as well, of CBS Sports. Amari Cooper, he's kind of the one I'm interested in. He's super cheap. Chris mentioned he's 18 months younger than Adams. I don't really mind that. I'm going to use both as a rental. But he also feels more of like the downfield stretcher, the guy on the outside, which I actually do think they do need a little bit of help on the outside because they've got a lot of the slot receivers. You know, we'll see if they ever really get Curtis Samuel going. But that's also where Kincaid falls in. We've taken a number of calls this week, Josh, of people that are just outright calling him a possession tight end. And I wouldn't disagree with that right now. He was a big part of why I was excited about this offense going into the year of, yeah, if they develop a top five tight end and one of the better slot receivers in football, they probably are going to be all right on offense. They've still been pretty damn good on offense. They're scoring a ton of points, and they're not really getting anything out of Kincaid yet. His one touchdown is coming off of a broken play. He's got 13 catches so far for less than 200 yards. They're not using him downfield. And that, his situation, I know they play different positions, but his situation right now is what's going to push me, I think, by the trade deadline. What would we say, November 5th?
November 5th, yep.
By that point, could push me to, you got to make a move for another weapon. Because right now, he's not going to do it in the playoffs. When Shakir is getting double covered because teams know that's their number one guy, and he is, I'm not feeling confident enough that Kincaid is going to be the guy that when Shakir's getting covered, he all of a sudden in a playoff game against the Bengals, the Ravens, the Chiefs, you know, whoever, all of a sudden he has, you know, to another guy that kind of failed here, or Gabe Davis game, where all of a sudden he's like, he's got 12 catches, 140 yards, and two touchdowns because they're just leaving him wide open because they're not going to let Shakir beat them. We haven't seen it. And I don't know if we're really ever going to see it. I want to. I really liked the pick. I was somebody that at that time, I had them picking a tight end in the first round, which is Michael Mayer, not Kincaid. But up to this point, I think he has been very, very frustrating. Through 20 games, it's been very frustrating. Let's get connected to our fans, though, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We go to Mike on the phone. Mike, how are we doing today?
Hey, guys. How are you? I understand all what you're talking about with Kincaid. I guess my point is that ever since Dable left, every guy that we bring in here as a special talent becomes useless. I mean, we brought in Hines as this great pass-catching running back. He was never used. Last year it was Sherfield and Hardy. Oh, we're going to bring in these two guys that are going to expand our offense. They were never used. This year it's Samuel, it's Hollins. Is it Kincaid or is it Brady not being able to figure out an offense to get these guys the ball? I mean, it's just every guy that we bring in. I mean, think, when was the last time we brought in a stud or a specialty player? It was Diggs. And who was our offensive coordinator? It was Dable. And what happened? Diggs was great. But the rest of these guys just seem to rot on the sidelines or become marginal players. And that's why, you know, this year when we, you know, the whole draft situation, we end up drafting Coleman, who's an okay wide receiver, and he'll be, you know, middle-of-the-road guy probably. I mean, there are very few number ones in this league, and we're going to be looking for a number one forever until we get one. And we're talking about Davante Adams. We're talking about Amari Cooper for a year rental. Well, what happens next year? I mean, we had an opportunity, and yeah, we would have had to give up a lot, but, you know, there's very few guys like Neighbors and those types of guys that you can actually get and have them on a rookie contract for 5 years instead of spending $30 million on Justin Jefferson. And it just seems to me that we're focused on the wrong thing. It's this offensive coordinator situation doesn't seem to be able to figure out how to use these guys that we bring in. So I'm worried we pick up Devontae Adams or we pick up Amari Cooper, and they can't figure out how to use them.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for the call. I agree to that point to a certain extent. I think Brady has done a good job so far at getting everyone involved. The Samuel thing is weird and frustrating, but you know, James Cook has exploded onto the scene. Khalil Shakir has been great. Matt Collins is your fourth wide receiver. I don't think anyone was expecting too much out of him. He's sort of taken up that Gabe Davis role of being a good blocker, come up with a few big catches, what have you, but nothing extravagant. The Hines stuff, though, last year with Sherfield and Hardy, even the Kincaid pick, that's all Dorsey. I think that's a big reason why Dorsey's not here anymore, is that when they got these players, he had no idea how to use them. I think that's a big reason why he's not here. Kincaid, though, was a Dorsey pick. That's the big guy that he was excited to use, the 12 personnel, the two tight ends, all that stuff. That was him.
The thing there, though, is Brady was still involved in the offense at that point. So I feel like Brady had some sort of input there.
He's going to have an idea, but I mean, look at the Sabres with Ralph Kruger and Don Granato. Yeah, well. He can be on the staff, but right, he may have wildly different ideas of what to do.
You're right. But I look at also the point of, yes, it's been kind of an issue since Dable left, but I also wonder if it's, you just haven't had enough time of one person in charge doing it all. Because
let's all be honest. Let's not look at this with rose-colored glasses. Dable was not always liked.
No.
He was not always perceived as this amazing OC.
And he had how many years to get his plan in place and get it to work?
Mm-hmm.
Then you immediately go to Dorsey, who had a wildly different idea of how to run this offense, if he had an idea at all, and it only lasts a year and a half. Now you're into almost a full year of Dorsey in terms of games, because he took over, what, week 8 last year? Week 9?
Around there, yeah.
Somewhere around there, after the Broncos game last year. And you're not even to that point in the season this year. So it's like, I think we just need to take a little time to let them kind of have their offense marinate a little bit. And yeah, it'd be nice to see some brighter signs early on. But again, like you said, everything with Dable wasn't liked at the beginning. It was very questionable at first. But then you get the right players in place, you get the right system with the guys you want, and everything clicks and everything works. And I think that's just kind of where we're trying to get to now with Joe Brady. I think he has the people he wants. He's just trying to find out how to put them in the right place at the right time. Like, perfect example, Curtis Samuel. He talked about Curtis Samuel after this past week's game, saying, you know, I got to get him more snaps. I got to get him in the right spot. Samuel hasn't really done much at all as a wide receiver. He's been more of a gadget guy this season. And while, yeah, he was like that in Carolina, he still had his moments where he was really good in terms of being just a pure wide receiver. So I think it's just going to take a little time for Brady to just kind of get this sort of back on track, because I think he's close to where he needs to be, but it's just got to get to that next step.
Hope so. 803-0550 is the number to call. Are we being a bit premature, actually, honestly, talking about Bills making a trade, for whether it be for an offensive weapon, or I even kind of threw out there a little bit, an edge rusher, linebacker, what have you. Love to hear your thoughts on that. Also, do want to mention the Sabres as well. Their season gets started tomorrow afternoon. We won't be on tomorrow. Sal will be, but their game gets going at 1 o'clock tomorrow in Prague. Definitely want to touch on them as well. But coming up at 11:30, Sal Capaccio will join the show, get us a better look at Bills practice today and yesterday. Terrell Bernard out of that non-contact jersey. Great to see. Still limited, but that's a great sign to see that he's potentially going to be playing this Sunday. Taron Johnson, though, still in that red non-contact jersey. And then a ton of guys not practicing. Deion Dawkins and Khalil Shakir, notably, for that. Love to hear your thoughts. Again, 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The Gel Flex Grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the Gel Flex Grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Joe, this is WGR.
The job is to move forward, right? Certainly understand what you're saying, and I've really been proud of the way the guys have stepped up. They've had to deal with quite a few situations, injuries, and now in this case, the suspension with Vaughn. I expect the same, quite honestly. Somebody's going to step up. That's what's in that locker room. Somebody needs to step up, and they have to this point.
Bears Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott talking, of course, the suspension of Von Miller 4 games for violating the league's personal conduct policy. The first game he'll be able to come back for is that Miami game right before the trade deadline. But in a way, yeah, he is sort of missing a little bit of a soft underbelly for this schedule. I am worried about Houston with C.J. Stroud, of course. I'd even say with Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. I don't think their offensive line is particularly good, but it does make me a little nervous going into that. But you know, the Titans, I think, should be good. Seattle, that one also a little nerve-wracking. So, yeah, 2 games not so nervous about. 2 games I'm a little nervous about.
And honestly, though, too, like, for any game for him to come back, the Dolphins one's kind of the perfect one.
Yeah, yeah. Who's going to be their quarterback at that point? You think it's going to still be Tyler Huntley? Or do you think Tua's back at that point? Because, I mean, Tua has outright said, like, I want to play again this year.
He looked fine on the side. I mean, you never know.
Never know, yeah.
But at the same time, like, if he's still out.
You got to start wondering at that point, like, is the season just done?
I wonder.
Because he's on IR.
Let's say the Dolphins give it another week or two, right, and see how it goes with Tyler Huntley, see how it goes with Tua. Does Ryan Tannehill enter the picture?
No, I don't think Ryan Tannehill ever. No, I don't think so.
I don't know. I'm curious about him because the organization has familiarity with him, necessarily Mike McDaniel.
I actually wonder if this organization, the Dolphins, I mean, would almost be kind of into the idea of
just scrapping it.
We've kind of seen how bad this team can be when Tua's not there. We've also kind of seen our coach has some serious limitations compared to his offensive mastermind, you know, compatriots. You know, Matt LaFleur is blowing teams out with Malik Willis. You saw last year O'Connell for Minnesota was winning games
even
with
now.
Joshua Dobbs. And yeah, like his rookie quarterback's out. Sam Darnold, we're 4-0.
Here we go. Sam Darnold or the Dolphins. Who says no? Darnold or the Dolphins?
Darnold, probably.
No, not in a trade.
Oh, well.
In the offseason.
No, because remember, they've spent so much money on Tua.
Well,
that contract's already there. That's why I'm saying, man, it's going to be the Giants.
That makes sense. But then what are the Dolphins going to do? Like, I mean, you can't.
Oh, I don't care. But
I don't either. But at the same time, I think it's mind-boggling. Like, I can't figure out what their plan is going to be. And I love it because it's, you know, stay bad. But, like, I just don't understand, like, how you're going to get out of that Tua contract now.
You're not. Honestly, Jacksonville's feeling the same. The Florida teams are in hell outside of Tampa.
Okay, but Jacksonville's
the same thing. But they're 0-4 with their guys starting.
You're right, actually.
And they're sitting there going, we literally just paid them. We literally just did this. And it's a disaster. I mean, if you're going from having the quote-unquote generational-type quarterbacks, the John Elways, the Andrew Lux, the Trevor Lawrences, and in year four for Lawrence, you're winless through the first month of the season – That's a real bad place to be.
Yeah.
A place that not many teams have been.
Because it's become, he's rookie, it's the coaching staff, maybe it's him.
Well, because I don't want to make it sound like first overall quarterbacks have never missed. They have. I do mean the generational guys.
Right.
The guys that are considered the can't misses, that have been slotted in as their draft class is number one overall pick in a mock draft for 3 years. And also have the college success to back it up. Lawrence did win a national championship his freshman year. He threw like 35 touchdown passes. He stuck with that on what ultimately we saw was the Clemson downfall. That team did get worse as Lawrence went on. Lawrence himself, though, really didn't. His stats kind of stayed the same. He was just as good. He looked great. He's 6'6". He can run the whole thing. It does feel like they kind of botched it right away by hiring Urban Meyer, and I think even now with Doug Peterson, you're finding out one of these days, I just don't even have to bring it on air, but I want to deep dive it because it's going on with Philadelphia again. They are such a dysfunctional organization that is not dysfunctional. I guess is maybe the best way to put it. Howie Roseman, their owners whose name I'm blanking on, they're very good. They kind of know what they're doing. Roseman can always put together a really good roster. Their coaches, though, head coaches, specifically post Andy Reid, have like a year where you feel good about them, and it's a tire fire from then on. Chip Kelly was the same thing. Chip Kelly, his first year, went to the playoffs after trading away a ton of people to bring in like a kind of his Oregon offense, what have you. Then tailspin. Doug Peterson in year two wins a Super Bowl with a backup quarterback. From then on, tailspin. Nick Sirianni, I think in year one or year two, makes it to the Super Bowl with Jalen Hurts, who ultimately is the guy that kind of ousts Carson Wentz at quarterback. And from then on, tailspin. What is going on there? I am so confused. And it's the same with the quarterbacks. Carson Wentz, great second year, where you know he's going to win the MVP if he doesn't tear his ACL in L.A. Tailspin. He is now back in Kansas City, and it's been bad since. Jalen Hurts, the year they make the Super Bowl, he looks like a future MVP regular quarterback. He looks like a Lamar Jackson in that mold, just he's built like a fullback. Tailspin. They are a mind-numbingly confusing organization because I think they do almost everything correctly, and then you look at them in 2 years and go, what is going on there?
But it's the resets are so quick. That's the thing.
Because I think their GM might be the best in the sport.
But is he, though? Because how do you constantly go through all these teardowns and rebuilds? Like, the rebuilding, yes, is great, but
it's the same thing.
It's the sustaining success.
It's the same thing. If I could do math, I'd be too powerful. My life had to humble me. Howie Roseman, if he could nail coaching hires, would simply be too powerful.
Right,
they had to humble him.
They had Shane Steichen in the building, and they let him go.
Well, it's the same thing. Frank Reich, though.
Well, right.
The year that they win the Super Bowl, Frank Reich's the offense coordinator. Mm-hmm. He kind of builds the offense for Wentz, and it ultimately worked perfectly for Foles. You saw Foles the next year, and they go to the playoffs and ultimately lose to New Orleans, but they do beat Chicago.
Yeah.
It was the next year or 2 years later. They were still able to kind of work it, what have you. But, yeah, Reich leaves, it's the same thing. And now I don't think they have that coordinator there that's like waiting to take over the helm. But it's just the Eagles are mind-numbingly confusing. I didn't mean to go off on that point. But
no, but I get it. It's one of the NFL's greatest mysteries.
Man, they frustrate me. Let's keep getting connected to our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We go back to the phones. We've got Tony on the line. Tony, how are we doing today?
Doing good, fellas. Back to the Bills, obviously. And I want to preface this by saying that I'm not in a state of doom and gloom coming off of the Ravens loss. But I do think there were things that I saw that everybody else is talking about that make me nervous. Nervous enough, fellas, I'll start here. Nervous enough to feel like October feels like a very 2-2 month right now. I get that the Jets are down a little bit, but with that, you know, you got a much better looking Seattle team coming in a couple of weeks. I heard you guys talking in that 7-2 range. I think we're going to get a little scare. I think October is a scary month, and I think it's possible we come out of it with a 500 record in October, taking us to 5-3. Here's, I guess, why. The passing game and the inability for separation, top of the list, and the guy that I don't think anyone wants to really beat up on because, he's likable and he's also filling a role that we're drawing comparisons to in Gabe Davis. But Mac Hollins sees the field an awful lot for a dude who brings very little to the table in the passing game. All right. I get the Gabe Davis comparison. I see Hollins as the kind of the point guy sometimes on those picks and rubs and stuff like that. Not only the blocks, he seems very good, you know, in those plays as well. But that's about it, man. All right. That's about it for a guy getting the second most snaps in a lot of cases on a weekly basis and just giving you nothing offensively. Gabe Davis made plays. Gabe Davis won football games for this team. You know, Mac Hollins is not Gabe Davis, and we got to stop that comparison just because, you know, he can block like him. He's a zero in the passing game, and Gabe Davis was a factor. And for me, if we're looking anywhere and we're looking to peel back some snaps, maybe we can find it in Curtis Samuel. But if that ain't it, all right, then I'm all in on anything that adds a pass catcher because I think we're too dependent on a blocker to see the field a lot as a wide receiver.
Mm-hmm. Tony, thanks for the call, man. I think that's fair. The comparisons, and you're right, are coming because he's a very good blocker, which was Gabe Davis's sort of big trait that I think did actually keep him on this team as long as it did, that there weren't more frustrations from the Bills outwardly about his very notable inconsistencies as a wide receiver. You're right. There were games Gabe Davis won them. I mean, let's be honest, 13 seconds, if it's a win, if that's in the win column, it's Josh Allen, and then right below him, and I mean barely below him, is Gabe Davis's record-breaking performance where he just carved up Kansas City, right? He had multiple times in his rookie year against the Colts, memorable. He had two just absurd sideline catches going into halftime that ultimately allows them to get a score before going into the half. Mac Hollins, you're right. You're not seeing enough of that. I will say, though, Josh, and you brought this up too, I wonder now with Curtis Samuel's name being thrown out there and hearing Joe Brady basically say, like, we need to get him the ball more. Mm-hmm. Like, I need to be better of getting him more involved. And I want to see what that looks like.
Yeah. I mean, I'm interested.
I want to see what that looks like.
Because I feel like at times Curtis Samuel could be like Khalil Shakir 2.0.
Yeah, another slot guy, another yak guy.
Because Shakir was kind of looked at as that sort of next version of the slot receiver. And I think that Samuel was one of the earlier versions of that, right? Like, it's going to be interesting to see how they get him involved because I don't really know how they're going to use him. They could use him many different ways. He's a different type of receiver where he's
But so far, what we've seen is not good. It looks a lot like the Isaiah McKenzie role.
Right. And again, that's the problem is you haven't seen him line up as a wide receiver. You've seen him line up under center, taking a snap on a trick play.
So good.
You've seen him taking handoffs as a running back.
That I like. I'm kind of all for that.
It's not that bad, but I would just want to see him more in the passing game before you get all cute and put him in the run game.
Mm-hmm.
Because James Cook has had a great season as a rusher so far, or as a runner so far. So it's really not that bad in terms of why are we putting wide receiver at running back? He should be out wide where he is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
If you have problems in the running game, then you have that conversation. But I just think that when you look at a guy like what at Curtis Samuel and what he's done in the past, I don't understand why they didn't start him out right away as get him the ball, see what he can do. Because in the preseason, they were, and he was doing fine.
Especially because he's the one receiver you brought in the offseason that you signed to a multi-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like when you did that, and it wasn't a major deal, but it's 3 years.
Right.
It felt like, okay, you're going to have an idea of what to do with him. And so far, it has not really seemed like they have a concrete idea what they want to do with him. On the October schedule, yeah, I mean, me and Josh brought it up too. I mean, the games against Seattle and Houston
Those are the two big ones.
Well, those are the ones I think they can definitely lose. The Jets team, to me, they are one more bad week away from literally imploding. And right. The Titans, that's a miss at quarterback with Will Levis.
Yeah,
I think even if he plays, which it sounds like he's going to, but it sounds like he's going to play, that's still a miss at quarterback. He doesn't really scare me all that much. They are getting healthier on defense, even with losing Teron, or even with losing Vaughn for four games. They are getting healthier on defense.
Yeah, getting Terrell Bernard. Hopefully
back this week,
yeah.
But we'll see on that. 803-0550 is the number to call. Zach Jones and Josh Mick. Got to take a quick timeout here. Taylor, we'll get to your call after this quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The GelFlex Grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex Grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
You sit in traffic now, but later there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling. Come on, move! You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few, but if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
It's time for Pitch Hit and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Give the kids in your community a chance to flex their superpowers, and they could earn a trip to the national finals of the 2025 World Series presented by Capital One. So go ahead, be the one who powers their dreams, and sign up to host the local Pitch Hit and Run event. It's a free and fun way to promote baseball, softball, and your organization. To learn more, go to pitchhitrun.com.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Mint hanging with you until 12 o'clock on the Extra Point Show. We're going to be joined by Sal Capaccio at 11:30, looking more at the Bills as they get ready to take on the Houston Texans. A big injury report yesterday. We've been talking a lot about Khalil Shakir potentially missing him this week with the ankle injury. Deion Dawkins also did not practice yesterday with a hamstring injury. We'll get more of a look at that when Sal joins the show at 11:30. But before then, we're going to get back to your calls. We'll go to the phones now. Taylor is on the line. Taylor, how are we doing today?
Hey, how you doing, guys? I appreciate having me on. So I kind of wanted to touch base on a couple of points in regards to like the trades that you guys mentioned earlier, as just like some thoughts. So I was actually talking to a friend, and I was saying to them, I was like, I really like this team. I think this team is a really good team chemistry-wise and all of that, and I think they can be a good or a great team if all the pieces health-wise, coaching-wise, everybody plays their parts, right? But I think when you guys mentioned those trades, I almost think we need two players away from being a consistent great team, right? So when we go up against teams like Baltimore or others down the line, right, we don't have these type of results. I think we're two players away. I think we're a wide receiver away, right? And I don't necessarily think it has to be Adams, right? It can be, but I don't think it has to be. I think it could be a Cooper. I think it could even be somebody like Hopkins in Tennessee. If you watch their games, he's not really as involved as you think he would be, right? Or on the defensive side, I'm looking not even at linebacker defensive end, but a playmaking safety, somebody with a skill set like a Honey Badger, because I think one of the Bills' couple downfalls were is that our safeties aren't as fast as they used to be. And if you look at the Derrick Henry, you know, touchdown, we're getting outrun by running backs and sometimes even wide receivers once they get to the outside. And I think if we look at those two positions, it almost looks like what L.A. did a few years ago when they brought in Odell and Von Miller during the season.
That's right, Taylor. That's a really good observation, man. Thanks for the call. It doesn't happen a lot, but yeah, when it does. I mean, L.A., I mean, that's, I think, where they kind of coined the F them picks. Like, Ron, when they're like, we're going to bring in everybody.
But I don't want
we're
going
to make a run.
I don't want the Bills to do that, though. I don't want them to
mainly because I don't think they're in that position where the Rams clearly were at that point of we've got an older quarterback. They were sort of in that spot, too, of like, we don't really know how good we are yet. We could be really good. We could not be. And they'd been there and done that. They'd been to a Super Bowl and failed. Remember, they had literally dealt Goff to get Stafford. They were in a much more desperate situation. But it is interesting. I like the idea, especially the Bills have one first round pick, 2 seconds, a third, and 2 fourths. So they do have draft capital just in this year alone to kind of get, you know, the wheeling dealing aspect if you were so inclined. I do agree on the safety point though, which is kind of why I want to see more Cole Bishop.
You gotta see what you got there.
Yeah, I really want to see what they got there.
It's his rookie year though, but at the same time, you want to see if he's a viable option for this season.
Yeah, where like you actually don't need to trade for a playmaking safety. And you got one.
And you're going to see him probably. I mean, I feel like if Taylor Rapp's going to be out for a week or two.
He's got a concussion as well. I didn't mention him, but yeah, I would imagine probably not playing at this point. I think yesterday you kind of needed to get more of a sign that he's not. Malik Nabers, also the concussion for the Giants. He's very much trending towards not playing. Got to take a quick time out here. Still, of course, taking your calls, 803-0550, the number to call. Mark, if you hang on the line, we'll get you after this short break. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
Town Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at NorthtownAuto.com.
Our number two rolls along here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Zach Jones and Josh Mint here with you, and today's show is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at NorthtownAuto.com. We go back to the phone lines as we're talking about the Bills, of course. You know, should they be even talking about trades yet? We're just going into the second month of the season. They're taking on the Houston Texans this week. They're getting healthier at some positions. They're also not at others. We're going to hear from Sal Capaccio at 11:30. But first up on the phone lines, we go to Mark here. Mark, how are we doing this morning?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How are you guys?
Anyways, very well.
I'm going to use a phrase of a guy I really don't respect for what he did to the Packers. Relax, guys. I feel like I want to use a term like I'm from the Twilight Zone or I was just in a time warp. For 3 weeks, we had the number one team in the NFL. The offensive line dominated. The defensive line dominated. We had an MVP quarterback. That's all everybody talked about around the whole country. And I know you're only as good as your last game. But They got decimated everywhere. The defensive line, offensive line, nothing worked on Monday. You know what, though? They're not that bad as Monday. And everybody's doom and gloom like they're 0-4. Now, the guy that just called in, yes, I'd love Devontae Adams. Yes, I'd love the Honey Badger. Yes, I love the Amari Cooper. They're not going to go get players they got to play $20 million a year for. If they were going to do that, they would have done that, guys. And I understand they did. They looked like a pitiful team Monday in every aspect of football, from coaching and everything. Linebackers out of position where McDermott was throwing his arms. It was a joke. It was so bad. But they're not that bad. Come on, guys. Let's just sit back and let's dominate and beat up the Texans. Now, if we don't, and we get look like that again, then it is time to worry, guys. I'll hang up and listen, guys. Take care.
Mark, man, thanks for the call. I think that is absolutely the right way to look at it, too. You never want to get too high off of one game. You never want to get too low off of one game. Now, and as Mark brought up there, but if they look the exact same against the Texans, then it's all of a sudden becoming...
when it becomes a pattern, it becomes a problem.
Exactly. It becomes a pattern. With that being said, again, we talked to John Harris yesterday, the Houston Texans sideline reporter. He's not that big on the run game. So So at worst, it's likely not going to look exactly the same. I am worried, though, going into this game, namely Deion Dawkins' injury. They have been a very good O-line, really, outside of Sunday night. And Dawkins has been a big part of that. I don't really know what kind of depth they have at the left tackle position. We're going to see. We're going to find out. Potentially, but he was getting worked on a lot on Sunday night. Basically, after every drive, I think Sal was saying that they would come off, he would get worked on his hamstring, and then didn't practice yesterday. Now, yesterday, you know, Baltimore, the team the Bills just played, are like notorious for that first game or the first practice after a game. A little bit of a rest day. Guys don't necessarily have to practice, what have you. You know, work on whatever you have. You know, don't freak out about it. Bills, I don't want to say less so, but it doesn't always feel that way. I'm very interested in what today's injury report looks like. I think if you have Khalil Shakir and Deion Dawkins both still out of practice, I think then you're starting to look at the Houston game. They're going to be undermanned. And while I have not liked how the Houston Texans have looked, that is concerning. And Josh, like you brought up too, it's like, you know, you look at some of these games here, these early games could dictate how the Bills want to play with the trade deadline. Now, with the Amari Cooper thing, and that's why I've been bringing it up, they don't have to pay him $20 million a year. To Mark's point, you'd have to pay him $600K a year. He would be your cheapest wide receiver by quite a margin.
And again, he'd be one of the cheapest players on the roster, which is just would be crazy. I mean, that's the thing is I can't sit here and look at what the Browns did to his contract and think that he won't be traded to any team. There's someone out there that's going to trade for that contract. And I know he's had drop issues this year. I know he hasn't looked like Amari Cooper. Yep. But look who he's catching passes from.
Yeah.
He's got to be checked out. In this situation where it's just, man, what am I doing here?
I want to see somebody point out that stuff with Cooper, because that the drop issues are a thing. He's leading the league in them through four games. I think he has eight, which is slightly concerning, if not more so.
You said it's $600,000 exactly?
I think so, yeah.
Zion Logue makes $618,000 at the cheapest player on the Bills contract, on the Bills cap hit.
Boy.
So
that's fun.
Again, if you go and get Amari Cooper, you get someone that, he won't perform up to the level of Devontae Adams, but he's still going to give you something that you don't have on your roster right now. He's still going to add to your roster.
I don't even think you necessarily need Adams.
No.
I think they do need, I believe, another outside guy. But to Chris Trapasso's point, he tweeted this out, I think, a few hours ago. Cooper works, I think, more with the Bills, or at least how I'm taking it from what he said, too. He is more the yak guy. He's the outside guy. Mm-hmm. I think I saw someone else, I can't remember now who, but even said, like, Cooper probably works better for the Chiefs as well, because he's not sort of that possession-wide receiver that isn't really going to extend plays, where Cooper can extend plays. You saw it this past weekend with Cooper on a play that ultimately got called back and shouldn't have been. He had like an 85-yard touchdown for Cleveland, and their offense is useless. I mean, you had to get that from him. I think, though, Cleveland is the interesting one, because Adams, the reason why he's being talked about so much is he effectively has asked for a trade. He has not outright done it, because we're doing extra steps where he preferred to be traded. And Ian Rappaport today was also tweeting out some of the – commented on or tweeted on some of the teams he'd like to go to, and like Pittsburgh's on there, New Orleans, and Kansas City, and Buffalo were on there as well. Where Cooper is an interesting idea because of how cheap he is, because of how late the Cleveland Browns actually did rework his contract into the season, it kind of felt like that was something they were pivoting to, and how bad they've been up to this point.
And the one thing, too, is not only are the drops maybe because he has a bad quarterback, right? But I also look at it, and maybe it's a mental thing for him of him trying to overcompensate for that bad quarterback play, not knowing where the ball is going to go. I mean, I'm watching a highlight right now from their Jaguars game where he's going to be wide open across the middle on a slant route, or what looks like it's going to be a slant route.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to tell because it's so early on in the route that he hasn't really gotten set yet. He just turns to Watson as he's throwing the ball, and it's above his head. He's got to jump up for it, and it skips off his hands out of bounds. But like looking at this play in particular, and again, it's not a telltale sign of what he is as a receiver, but let's say this route continues over the middle, right? And he has more time to set himself up and be ready to catch a pass. It's not like he's just turning around to catch it. You got to wonder what that play in particular turns into. And again, this is, you know, one play. It's a bit of a broken play. Mm-hmm. I mean, Watson's getting hit as he throws it too. So that's another,
yep,
you know, thing to look at there. But it's just, I look at what he's dealing with, and I just don't, I don't know if it's a good indicator of if he's actually good or bad.
If he's been a major problem. I will say, right, though, so we're on Cleveland now here for just a second. They are 1-3. What do you think their highest point total they've scored so far in a game has been? I'll give you a clue. It's terrible.
Okay. I thought
not good.
Well, the way you loaded the question, I thought it was going to be like some crazy high number and we're just going to be losing all these games. I'm going to go with 19.
So close. 18.
Really?
They lost to Dallas in week 1, 33-17. They beat Jacksonville week 2, 18-13. They lost to the Giants in week 3, 21-15. And they lost to Vegas last week, 20-16.
You lost to Vegas.
They are one of the worst offenses in football.
It's
points per game
at
16.5. They're 27th in the league. Yards per game at 276.5. They're 30th in the league.
Who else do they have there? I mean, like, aside from Amari Cooper, is like
Jerry Jeudy is leading the way.
Oh, Jerry Jeudy!
In both receptions, yards, he's second to Cooper in touchdowns. Jeudy leads the way with 18 catches, 197 yards, and
Elijah
one
Moore.
Touchdown.
Elijah Moore is there.
He's got 12 catches, 81 yards. I loved Elijah Moore coming out of Ole Miss.
You got me on the Elijah Moore train a few years ago.
Yeah,
and
it has been a miss up to this point.
I just think that, like, we were talking about this in one of the breaks. It's like we were trying to find players that the Bills could potentially trade for that are more locked up long-term rather mm-hmm. than this one-year rental type, because that's what Cooper is, that's what Davante Adams kind of is, basically. And it's tough to find, so I feel like you have to kind of get these rental players. I don't think you can go out and get someone that's locked up long-term like the Bills did last year with Rasul Douglas. I don't think there's a situation like that, at least right now anyway, that's revealing itself.
No, I'm going to probably say it a lot until the trade deadline. I'd be very against signing, even if you traded for him, Davante Adams or Amari Cooper to long-term deals. I think this team needs to attack the draft like they've been doing.
Yes.
Their problem has been, the terrible luck of just like, all right, four wide receivers went right away. We got to take Dalton Kincaid. Or last year, it was such a good wide receiver class. I think, seven, eight guys went by the time you take Keon Coleman.
To be fair, they did trade down.
They did trade down, but, I mean, ultimately, they take the next receiver.
Right. But, I mean, if you look at that, I mean, if you look at that draft, right, who were the guys that were on all of our wish lists as, you know, us looking at the draft? One of them being Brian Thomas Jr.
He's
he goes
before.
At like 17.
Yeah.
So
I know people have brought up like the Malik Neighbors and stuff. And we took a call. I can't remember which one, but even mentioned like, you know, we had a shot to go get it. Trading up for those guys is a bad business plan.
It's also impossible.
That's why it's a terrible business plan. You are going to give up so many draft picks in the hope that combination of Allen and let's throw it out there, Malik Neighbors.
Brian Thomas
fixes a ton of issues you will have almost immediately.
Yeah. Brian Thomas Jr. at 23, by the way. So actually not that high.
And he's looked very, very good with Jacksonville up to this point. Well, remember, I mean, Justin Jefferson was picked in the 20s.
Right.
You know, you can get very, very, especially as I brought up, the receiver position is entering into its golden age of just like every year you're going to have five or six guys that could be round one talents. Not every year are you going to have five or six of them taken because teams will have already done it.
But this year there were seven.
But I don't. Yeah, but
like that's the thing. Like it's tough to like look at this draft again and think, yeah, you know, it's fine. Like I'm not saying I'm not happy with Keon Coleman, but because I mean it's still very early on for him. But like looking at what everyone else is doing, if Brian Thomas Jr. doesn't have Trevor Lawrence as his quarterback, what are his numbers like?
Lawrence has been bad.
Malik Nabers is putting up crazy numbers with Daniel Jones. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just look at all of the guys that were available, and yes, Malik Nabers and Roma Dunze and obviously Marvin Harrison Jr. too, those three were kind of untouchable. And we knew that from the start. We knew that those three would be
pretty
high.
As much as I think a lot of people wanted to trade up for him, that was just not feasible.
But a guy like Brian Thomas Jr., I remember watching him fall on draft night, and it's like, and then you see the trade graphic pop up when Jacksonville gets that pick.
I think I definitely jinxed it. I think that night I think I was saying something along the lines of like Brian Thomas to the Bills, it's written in the stars, and like he gets taken like 30 seconds later. I think I did do that.
It's your fault.
Yeah, it's probably
because in reality, I mean, that's five picks the Bills would have had to move up originally. They were at 28, and you could have gotten up five picks, right? Like it's tough to say if it's doable, but at the same time, given everything that's going on at that point, you can't not go up and get that. I think. I mean, again, it's a little too early to tell, obviously. But
it's very early to tell. But I'm excited to see what...
If we see the similar draft style next year, then I'm going to have some question marks. Because like you said, you have to kind of keep going at the youth here because there's not much available in terms of veterans, in terms of players that can help you now while your young players get better.
Especially because the best thing about a lot of these receivers, like the Malik Nabers, is you're getting him so cheap. You're able to fill out the rest of your roster well. Like, I mean, let's be honest.
Oh, in terms of cap hit, you're saying?
Yeah. The season's going to end, and we're all going to just unanimously say, no one's going to really put too much thought in it, Malik Nabers is a top 10 wide receiver in the game. I think most people would say that. Marvin Harrison Jr. probably will also be in that group. And they're getting them on effectively pennies on the dollar based on what they will be valued at in like 3-4 years. That's the importance of it. And that's where my frustration has been with the Bills up to this point, is that I don't think they've attacked that position enough. Their biggest issue when they had Stephon Diggs was not Stephon Diggs demanding the ball. It was the fact that he had to demand the ball in a sense, because the wide receiver room around him was never very good. We took a call earlier today talking about Ken Dorsey's stuff, or really the offensive coordinators in general post-Dable. You got nothing out of Trent Sherfield and Dante Hardy. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And you tried again with Gabe Davis being your number two. And while, again, there were flashes, they were just never consistent enough to be a number two. His stats were alarmingly similar the whole way down. And it led to a stagnation with the offense. Where now, over the last three drafts, they have attacked it. They've attacked weapons, not necessarily wide receiver, but weapons on the offense with James Cook, then Dalton Kincaid, then now Keon Coleman. I still think they have more work to do. As we're seeing, the one other guy they've added via free agency to a long-term deal is Curtis Samuel, and we're all sitting here going through four games, so I don't know what his role is. Do the Bills know what his role is? That still is going to be a need come April. It is. And to this point, too, I think now as well we're seeing a very clear what the Bills want as a wide receiver, and I think that's going to be nice to kind of figure out. They want yak guys. I'm looking at someone like Isaiah Bond out of Texas, Luther Burden out of Missouri. We'll see how the draft boards fill out. Burden's probably going to be out of their range. Isaiah Bond, though, potentially isn't. He adds speed. He's not a skinny, kind of twig of a guy like Worthy arguably is. Mm-hmm. But Bond could be absolutely somebody that is going to be interesting for the Bills. It's just adding a guy like a Cooper, if they were to do it. And I think up to this point, I still think it's very early to talk about that, because I do want to see how this goes. This year is figuring out what of your core is moving forward. What of this young group is talented enough to move forward? Yes, I get it. It's in the middle of a Josh Allen, prime year. Guess what? You're still winning with Josh Allen because you have him at quarterback. So you can figure this stuff out rather than have every year be a panic move to try to win the Super Bowl. That's not how it operates. That is how you immediately fall apart and lose. I mean, would we rather try desperately to trade everything away at the picks like the Rams and potentially miss? Because let's look back at that Rams Super Bowl year.
There was a lot that went right.
It took a lot going right, including inexplicably Tampa Bay just letting Cooper Kupp run down the field.
Right.
And even then, when he catches it, he doesn't score a touchdown. They have to fly down the field and spike it. Then, of course, you have Cincinnati, and that was even close to the point. I get it. One Super Bowl, yes. You're not definitively saying, though, you're getting a Super Bowl when you make these moves. What you are saying, though, is if it misses, we're screwed for at least 2 years. Yeah. Then you are wasting years. Then you are sitting here going, cool, we're Drew Brees' Saints when he was like 30, where we're 7-9, 6-10, our defenses are dreadful, our offenses are pretty good, he's throwing 5,000 yards, and we suck. Like, that's always my fear, because it's not necessarily a fear, it is just the likelihood of throwing everything to the wind to go make one big move, which ultimately won't move your win total. It'll get you a lot of talk on sports talk shows, on TV, what have you. It won't move your win total, almost ever. Quarterback moves your win total. But like here, Khalil Shakir, let's say for argument's sake he's ruled out. What's the Bills' line right now against the Houston Texans? Do we know it? Probably. Buffalo is I'm seeing on Yahoo, I just threw up my sports app. They're at -1. You know what that line's probably going to be if Khalil Shakir gets ruled out, like tomorrow? -1. I mean, it doesn't change enough. Yeah. What does change, though, is having no draft capital and using all of your cap space, which you are building towards for next offseason, to get Davante Adams to sign for like a 3-year deal. I don't think the Bills will do that. It's a terrible business plan. Bad teams do that. Bad teams make the panic moves to try to become relevant and stay great. Mm-hmm. You see it a lot on falling dynasties.
Well, and you go back to there was a call we took in the first hour talking about how, you know, why hasn't this offense gotten anything out of it like Daboll did. And I think to go back to your Curtis Samuel point, it's just because they're trying to figure out what they have in such a short amount of time. Brady has only had not even a full season of NFL games under his belt yet as the Bills offensive coordinator. I understand he was an offensive coordinator in Carolina, mm-hmm. but he didn't have Josh Allen. He didn't have anything else that he has here right now. When he was in Carolina, he basically just had Curtis Samuel.
Well, no, like, I mean, he had DJ Moore and he had Robbie Anderson.
Okay, right.
It was DJ Moore. It was more,
and that was kind of the end of Robbie Anderson, though. Like as we
in terms of like the high end, you're thinking
right
good
as
of him,
we
yeah.
knew of him. Yeah,
but I think for me, what was always
he never had that
about,
quarterback there, though. That's the thing. Like that's what I think he's trying to figure out now how to do is use Curtis Samuel with a competent quarterback, because when he was there, it was. You have to figure out how to use Curtis Samuel with who was their quarterback at the time. Probably like P.J. Walker.
Teddy Bridgewater.
I know. P.J. Walker's just been there forever.
But,
so.
But that was always the one thing that I leaned on with that year is while they weren't good, he turned Teddy Bridgewater, who was never, at least in the NFL, never a big stats guy.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, he almost made him a 4,000-yard passer. He was very close to having 3 1,000-yard receivers. They were a bad team. They had to throw the ball a lot. I get it. But
I think that
was a nice sign to see. I think right now, though, what you're seeing with the Bills is they don't necessarily have the Robbie Andersons, the DJ Moores. They do have kind of their Curtis Samuel and Khalil Shakir for that year.
Well, that's the thing, too, I was just going to say, is you don't have that DJ Moore, which, again, a Curtis or a Amari Cooper could become that. A Davante Adams could become mm-hmm. that, but obviously better in terms of Davante Adams. But you don't have that style of player. And I think that... That might be the one thing that they maybe didn't think they needed, or maybe they thought they already had in someone else. Who that might be, I don't know. But that's my point, though, is they're still trying to figure out what to make this offense do. And again, like we saw a lot of people saying, including ourselves, this offense, once it gets humming, it will be good. It just might take a little bit. It might take till week 6 or 7.
It might also ultimately, I know the guys over at One Bills Live have talked about this a lot, of like they thought – that this team maybe overall could be better than last year's, but it would take some time.
Right.
It just happened to be that the first 3 weeks they were humming and really to a certain point also weren't having to flex their muscles. They were eliminating teams pretty early.
And
it might actually be something that, by week 5, 6, 7, they do finally kind of find their rhythm. I think it's the same thing with Dalton Kincaid. I'm going back with someone on Twitter named Michael. Kind of we're sort of in a disagreement of I'm worried about Kincaid. He's not too worried about him, but – I mean, it's the thing that, like we get to the bye week, or not the bye week, the trade deadline, and all of a sudden it's like, no, Kincaid's emerged. They've really figured out the role for Curtis Samuel. Shakir continues to do what he's doing, and all of a sudden we are sitting back going, Mark Cooper, Davante Adams, why would I do that? You know, I think they will have to make a move at some point in the deadline. I'm really kind of always there for any sports team in any league.
Yeah, you always want to bolster yourself.
Yeah, if you're in a playoff spot at the trade deadline, you should do something.
Because what's the biggest problem the Bills have had over the past 4 years?
Yeah, they run out of depth.
They run out of depth fast. And to be fair, every year is different. You never know how injuries are going to affect your team. But I would just you know, I'd rather be more prepared than not. And so far in history, or in, you know, history will tell you that the Bills always need linebackers when it comes to the playoffs.
Apparently.
And right now you're seeing that very quickly because, I mean, Matt Milano injured right away and Terrell Bernard injured right away, but Bernard probably is coming back soon.
Yep.
Milano might be somebody you get back later on in the season, but it's...
That always felt like... That has always felt like a blind hope to me. That like, oh, he might be back in December. And I'm like, cool, I will see in 2025.
Right, exactly.
Like, that's always how it has felt to me.
But that's where it gets to the point of, you know, yes, offense could be in need at the deadline, but there could be very much other things that need to be addressed in terms of depth, like linebackers. But, you know, time will tell on that. I mean, it's tough to tell because you don't want to base your season off of what happens in the first half because you have to prepare for the second half, which is the important part.
Yep. Right?
I mean, that's the tricky part about trade deadlines, especially when they're in the middle of the season like the NFL's is.
Mm-hmm. Also, went to FanDuel Sportsbook. We brought this up earlier with the favorites. Bills are 1.5-point favorite in Houston. So, and if Shakir gets ruled out, I'd imagine it probably still stays at about 1.5.
Yeah.
Dawkins, though, I do wonder about left tackle. Or really like a tackle position, if that would change how things go.
I think with Dawkins, maybe yesterday was just kind of a, let's just hold you out for today. Hoping.
We'll get a better look at practice, though, yesterday and also going forward to today. As coming up after a quick timeout, Sal Capaccio joins the show. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, they got a lot of guys who arguably can be a number one receiver on the team, so it definitely opens it up. You can't really go in there and sit here and say, oh, I'm going to double this guy or double this guy, because, like, well, you're putting somebody else in the dilemma. It's got guys that you got to win matchup. You got to win your matchup and just compete.
Buffalo Bills cornerback Rasul Douglas talking about the very, very talented Houston Texans wide receiver room. I think Nico Collins has ascended into that category of top 10, I think easily top 10 receiver, but he just I said it yesterday with John Harris, the Texans sideline reporter. He like reminds me of the DK Metcalfs, the AJ Browns, and then when he brought up like that defensive player mentality, I'm like, yeah, the old school safeties of like Brian Dawkins and Ed Reed, where if you're a cornerback, you're also a safety. It's going to hurt to try to bring those guys down. 803-0550 is the number to call if you want to jump in on some of the conversations we've been having today. But right now we go to the Wester Hotline. The Buffalo Bills, an extensive injury report from yesterday. And for more on that and today, we hear from our own Sal Capaccio there on the Wester Hotline. Sal, good morning. How are we doing today?
Pretty good, guys. Yeah, I mean, going to be down at practice here in about an hour, and then we'll see if Deion Dawkins is back on the field, if Khalil Shakir is back on the field, what the situation is with Taylor Rapp. So obviously a lot to monitor today.
And on that Deion Dawkins one as well, he was somebody that I think you said it a few times now over this week of just like during the Ravens game, every time a drive ended, he was going to get worked on his hamstring, whether it be in the blue medical tent, off the side, what have you. That is an injury. We haven't brought it up actually a ton today. We've been obviously talking a lot of wide receivers, Khalil Shakir mainly, but like that is an injury. I don't really know 100% yet what like their depth is at left tackle because it seems Deion has just been a stalwart. He's going to be there 17 games out of the year.
Yeah, for sure. He's been really durable and a rock at left tackle protecting Josh Allen's blind side. So, you know, when an injury occurs for him, it's more notable even because it's not normal and common for him. A lot of guys, you know, you deal with things here and there, and I'm sure he does, but he's always been, like I said, so durable and consistent. But look, I mean, it was Wednesday yesterday. He didn't practice. Sean McDermott indicated before practice that they are managing it, but also there is concern he could miss the game. So it's really how it reacted to treatment yesterday and what they feel today. If he doesn't practice today, that's not great news as far as his availability for Sunday. Doesn't mean he's out, though. You still have tomorrow. There's been times where guys didn't practice Wednesday and Thursday. They did practice on Friday, and they played in the game. And look, he's Deion Dawkins. He knows the system. It's not like he has to necessarily have all those reps throughout the week. Excuse me. You'd love to have those reps, but it's not necessarily, you know, incumbent upon him to be able to have those to play. If he doesn't play, I would expect Ryan Vandermark to be, you know, his Josh Allen's left tackle, the Bills' left tackle on Sunday. So we'll see on that. And yeah, you're right. Sunday, he did come out of the game. Every time the drive was over, it seemed like they were kind of working on it. But he never missed a rep, to my knowledge, to the injury itself. And then Khalil Shakir is in the same boat as Deion, really, but with the ankle. And, you know, we'll see how it progresses over, again, about an hour or so when they get on the practice field.
So another guy that was the interest of Bills fans yesterday with practice, at least he was practicing, was Terrell Bernard. Out of a non-contact jersey, what did that look like? I mean, you know, how does it look for his outlook for the game this weekend?
I think he's trending in a really, really positive direction, just kind of knowing how these things normally go. He practiced last week but did not play, but was in a red non-contact jersey. And then he shows up yesterday in a blue jersey, where the defense is wearing blue this week, at practice, and which means no red non-contact, and it's his second full week of practice, essentially. So I think that, you know, meaning full, meaning, you know, every day. So unless there's some sort of setback, which you don't think so, we talked to him after practice. He didn't say necessarily if he's playing or not, guys, but he's taking it day by day. It just feels like it's trending towards Terrell Bernard being able and available to play on Sunday in Houston.
And then what about Taron Johnson? Obviously, he's limited yesterday, but he's in that red non-contact jersey. But, I mean, also, even looking back to last week, he was sort of the guy that wasn't pressing while Bernard was now sort of taking the steps he is. So I'm assuming this week probably, well, not obviously ruled out yet, kind of, I'm assuming, trending that way?
You know, it's interesting with him. It feels like he's kind of in the same bucket that Bernard was last week, right, where he shows up. He's in a red non-contact. He's practicing, but he doesn't actually play. So at this point, I would probably lean more on that side, guys, that like maybe he's not. But honestly, it's pure speculation on my part, only based on, you know, previous kind of, you know, watching how these things go. He also said after practice that just taking it day by day, he'll see how he feels. He said he has played with a cast on his hand before when he broke his hand. This is different. This is the forearm, but he is able to play. You know, if they have to, they had a big brace and wrapped up yesterday. The thing that gets me more towards, I don't know if he's going to be playing, even though he practiced yesterday and he was termed limited. I mean, even the limited was limited. He did not take part in any contact whatsoever in the positional drills that I watched. So, like, if they were going against a bag, and everybody's kind of wrapping up the bag or hitting the bag, he never did that. If there was any kind of hitting or touching, like another person, like sometimes they go and just kind of show you some formations and the guy runs with the ball and you kind of just up thud, you go up and you wrap him up. He didn't do any of that. So there truly was no contact there. Reminds me of Bernard. Bernard actually did a little bit more last week in the red non-contact than Taron did yesterday in the red non-contact. However, again, it doesn't mean that today we get out there and he does a little bit more, and maybe by Sunday he's playing.
And I mean, to be fair too, I mean, even if he misses this week, they have a quote unquote longer week because they'll be playing on Monday night against the Jets. So I mean, you'll have a little bit to play there as well. Two other guys that did not practice yesterday: Austin Johnson, defensive tackle, oblique injury, and then safety Taylor Rapp. He's obviously in concussion protocol. Kind of two questions here, Sal. With Austin Johnson not practicing, and them just signing Zion Loke, he was out there yesterday. He has to be on the 53-man roster. So, I mean, are we imagining then that he's going to get some playing time there? And then with Rapp, Cole Bishop, he's somebody I really want to see get more playing time, especially we didn't get to see much in training camp. And even through these little spots that he's been able to get into some of these blowouts, I have liked what I've seen.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I think they have a plan for Cole Bishop, right? I think he's going to be a starter on this team at some point, whether that's now due to injury, later in the year due to play, next year, whatever it is. I mean, Cole Bishop's going to be an integral part of this organization, this defense, hopefully for a long time. There's a plan there. Right now, though, he's not the starter. It's Taylor Rapp and Damar Hamlin. Taylor Rapp is in concussion protocol. He did work off to the side yesterday, which is good news. A lot of times you don't even see those guys, so we'll see how he progresses. And I know the game was on Sunday night last week, so it's a little less time. I know, and hours do matter when it comes to a concussion. However, I remember last year there was a player, and I can't remember who it was, maybe Ty Johnson, if my memory serves me, who had a concussion on a Monday night game and then played on Sunday. So it's possible to progress through the protocol and play on Sunday after a Sunday night game. The Bills, actually, recent history, a lot of guys, they do progress through the concussion protocol pretty well. They have, you know, their benchmarks and standards they have to follow with the league and the protocol, and they get them to that point. So we'll see about Taylor Rapp. What's complicating the issue here is, guys, Taylor Rapp's backup, yes, is Cole Bishop, but also Cam Lewis would be a normal backup at safety, but Cam Lewis is currently playing nickel corner for Taron Johnson. So all of that kind of gets baked in. Now, let's say Taylor Rapp can't make it back and Cam Lewis has to play nickel corner. I would expect somebody to get elevated. Lewis Cine or Kareem Jackson are both on the practice squad. One of those guys would then need to be elevated for Sunday's game. So I think a lot of that still has to be determined, and we'll see where it goes. As far as defensive tackle is concerned, yes, Austin Johnson has an oblique injury. Now, remember, Javon Solomon missed two games early in the year with an oblique injury. If Austin Johnson is out any length of time, I mean, they could obviously think about IR, but if it's shorter than that, you know, yeah, you're probably looking at Zion Logue, because Zion Logue is on the 53. Right now, they only have five defensive tackles. And if one is down, that's four. And you have to have at least four. They're going to dress for a game. So, yeah, I would think Zion Logue could be. You could also look to elevate Elianku or Branson Dean for that spot. So a couple of things they're going to have to work through here.
You know, as soon as you went into those safeties there, I was thinking about Lewis Cine, but then I remembered, I saw this video yesterday of him doing one-on-one drills with the linebackers. What do you think that could mean, and what could that mean for his availability on Sunday and even going forward?
Well, he's not a linebacker. What it would mean to me, guys, is, and I know you're not suggesting that, but just so when everybody hears that, oh, he's working with linebackers, they change his position. No, but what happens is you have that dime safety role in the Bills' defense, right? The dime safety plays a little closer to the line of scrimmage. It doesn't play in the back end traditionally like an actual safety. It's the role that Jordan Poyer basically played last year. Jordan Poyer, at the end of last year, was playing dime safety. It's the role Jamarcus Ingram has played really through games, you know, most of one, then two and three, not as much on Sunday. So my guess is that they're working him to be able to understand linebacker duties to play a dime safety role. That would be my best guess. But it's only Wednesday. They're working through injuries. They probably want to make sure with everyone where they are, what they know in case they have to go in. But I wouldn't discount it if Lewis Cine could be elevated. And maybe, look, it didn't work in Minnesota. And a lot of people will tell you, it's just like, it wasn't just because he got injured his rookie year and he missed. Like, it just never worked with him there. Well, maybe he was a little miscast. Maybe no one knew that. And nobody would suggest coming out of draft that he would be more. He was a safety coming out. He was regarded as a very high safety. He was drafted in the first round, I believe it was. So, but maybe the Bills looked at him and said, you know what? He'd be better if we moved him closer to the line of scrimmage and played more of a linebacker safety hybrid role.
Could definitely be interesting to keep an eye on there. Sal, what is the schedule looking like for today? I know you mentioned practice coming up here in just about an hour or so.
Yeah, 12:30 p.m. We're going to be on the practice field. Players will practice today, and then we'll hear from players after practice. Tomorrow, I'll be on here on the Extra Point Show, and we're going to have Sean McDermott. We don't exactly know what time yet. I'll let everybody know that. But as soon as we do, we'll put that out there. But obviously, we'll hear from him during the show, and he'll give us an update on injuries. And if there's anybody declared out, it'll be obviously pretty important to hear Sean McDermott on the Extra Point Show tomorrow to figure out and find out what's going on with injuries. And of course, Patrick Hammer will give us a Houston weather check, although that's really mainly for anybody going to the game, because the game itself, guys, they're going to have the roof closed. It won't matter.
Yeah, Texas stadiums in the NFL and having domes. I don't know. I just, let the sun shine. I don't know. Sal, though, real quick before we let you get out of here.
Yeah.
Baseball, Yankees, Royals, how are we feeling?
Well, I mean, if the Royals pitch like they did against the Orioles, it's going to be a really tough matchup for the Yankees because they pitched terrific. I do like the Yankees. I'd rather face the Royals than the Orioles, just given kind of how their rosters are and the Orioles' success against the Yankees this year, recent history. But at the same time, 5 days off, 6 days off for the Yankees, and then you have good pitching coming in. Like, that's tough. But Garrett Cole's going game one. We'll see what happens. Should be fun.
All right, Sal. Enjoy practice today, and we'll talk again soon, man.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the West Her Hotline. Again, he'll be on tomorrow. Patrick Hammer, Sean McDermott. Leading into Sabres pregame?
That's going to be exciting. Zach, you know what just popped up on my timeline?
What?
11 years ago today.
Oh, boy.
Bills play the Browns on Thursday Night Football.
Oh, the E.J. Manuel didn't. That's when he,
E.J. Manuel's knee.
Sprained his knee or something.
I just watched that hit again. How did nobody just go after that defender? I mean.
Yeah.
Manuel is, granted, he's not necessarily giving himself up, but he's down the sideline. He gets a first down pretty effectively. And then it looks like, I don't even know who it is, like a safety or something like that, just drops down and just lowers the boom on his leg.
This is 2013, right?
11 years ago. So yes, 2013. I can't tell what player it is. I think it's a 3 and maybe an 8, but I don't really know. But I just, seeing that hit, I'm like, man. Mm-hmm. If someone did that or even like tried that with Josh Allen, the amount of players that would be up in that defender's face.
I remember convincing myself up to that Cleveland game, because I do remember that one specifically. I remember convincing myself, Manuel's figuring it out. He's getting better. He's getting better. Right. You know what doesn't prove that? Literally any of his stats leading up to that. Completion percentage up to the Cleveland game against the Jets, 45%, 19 completions to 42 attempts, a touchdown, 243 yards. The win against Baltimore, a game I actually did attend, which was a lot of fun. I went with like 7 of my high school friends. It was a lot of fun. He was 10 of 22, again, 45 completion percentage, 167 yards, a touchdown, and 2 interceptions. I remember, was it Robert Woods? Maybe. He was down the field, wide open, time to throw, never looked at him. And like the 7 or 8 of us were just like, what is happening here?
In this game, EJ Manuel, before he leaves the game, mm-hmm. 11 of 20, 129 yards. Fred Jackson, 17 rushes, 53 yards and 2 touchdowns. Robert Woods, 5 receptions, 64 yards.
What a time to be alive, man.
Bills go to 2-3 when they lose that game.
What a time to be alive.
Josh Gordon on the Browns.
Oh, yeah.
Brandon Whedon at quarterback. Man. Sorry, I don't know why this just popped up on my timeline, but it's just...
Josh Gordon.
Gotta love it.
Josh Gordon. Wow. What a player. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Josh Mint. We're going to be here for just one more segment before we get you over to Sabres Live at the top of the hour. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as we wrap up a Thursday edition of the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Of course, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Josh, I'm so upset. I wanted to talk more Sabres today. We got lost in the wide receiver. We were taking calls, all that stuff.
We're here. In 24 hours.
Well, the next time we're on.
24 hours and 10 minutes, pregame will be starting.
And the next time we're on, we'll have 2 games that are actually done. Mm-hmm. Which is a lot of fun. They're in Prague, taking on the New Jersey Devils. Lance Lysowski, this is a number of hours ago because obviously the time difference, but the lines from practice today, I saw those and like this is the first time I got like really excited. It was like the night before. I was like, ooh, okay. Top line, Paterka, Thompson, Tuck, second, Benson, Cousins, Quinn, Zucker, McLeod, Greenway, Malenstein, Lafferty, and...
Nicholas Abe-Kubel.
I'm going to figure out that middle part. Abe-Kubel.
Abe-Kubel,
okay. And then Kulik, Krebs, and Rusek.
It's like the fifth line.
Yeah. On defense, Dahlin, Jokiharju, Byram, Power, Samuelson, Clifton, Gilbert, Bryson, and then Clegg was kind of swapping in there. And then UPL, to nobody's surprise, in the starter's net.
Also from Lance, about an hour ago, he was talking about, Lindy Ruff was talking about the Zucker McLeod Greenway line. Greenway was a guy that I was really excited when the Sabres got him. I just never thought they used him correctly, and he didn't fit into Granato's system. Mm-hmm. And I think these quotes from Lindy Ruff will kind of confirm that. Quote from Lindy, we've got a couple of guys that are really good defenders with really good speed, like Greenway, obviously McLeod. Zuck is a good skater too and has speed. I really feel that the offensive part will fall into place. I like the way they've played. More on Greenway. Quote, I love his game. His game fits the way that we want to play. So.
Interesting.
Interesting. And he also talked about Greenway's back-checking, and then just that whole line is a back-checking line as well.
Yeah.
And even on top of that, too, you can go look at the Malenstein, Lafferty, Abe-Kubel line. There was a clip that someone put together from the first game against Pittsburgh before the Sabres went to Europe. So this was the Sabres starters playing against,
the 2 games they got or something like that?
Yeah, granted, it was Pittsburgh's AHLers pretty much, right? Like, it wasn't really NHLers, but... That line of Malenstein, Lafferty, and Abe-Kubel controlled play so much. They didn't even have the puck, but they controlled where the other team could go because of where they were positioned defensively.
Which is what you want from a third, fourth
line.
And
it just gave me flashbacks to when I was a little kid watching the Sabres just destroy teams with Mike Greer, Paul Gostad, and insert name here.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I think we're going to see right away is that return of the... smothering on defense on the bottom six, and then the top six is just going to have to figure out their offense. And I think that's what we're going to see from the Sabres here. And you know what? It's worked before.
I mean,
it might work again.
Puck possession and not forcing your top six to have to do everything and just focus on what they're good at.
Right. And obviously, for this team. In there, too, he talks about Zucker, McLeod, and Greenway having offense. I think that'll definitely show itself.
Mm-hmm.
But if that fourth line can just be that puck possession, defensive zone winning, everything is good on your end, pass it up. And
a little grimy.
Maybe yep. goes, yeah, that grinder line. That's what you need. That's what you've missed. So
should be a lot of fun. Again, pregame starting tomorrow at 12 o'clock for a 1 p.m. puck drop against the New Jersey Devils over in Prague. But speaking of hockey, coming up after a quick timeout here, Sabres Live, of course, going to get you ready for tomorrow afternoon. And then, of course, they're playing on Saturday morning as well. Should be a lot of fun. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt, thanks for listening. This is WGR.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.